You're listening to KJZZ's Here and Now in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Nuclear energy has been and continues to be controversial. In some circles, it's considered to be relatively environmentally friendly because it emits fewer greenhouse gases than coal-fired plants, but there's great concern about radiation and disposal of nuclear waste. And the Palo Verde Nuclear Generating Station, about 45 miles west of Phoenix, is the nation's largest nuclear plant. Miriam Wasser of Phoenix New Times has learned a lot about nuclear energy since moving to Arizona a couple of years ago. And in the paper's latest edition, she writes in-depth about that, including a trip to Chernobyl in a piece titled The Millennial's Dilemma, A Young Writer's Search for Our Nuclear Future in Chernobyl, Fukushima, and Phoenix. Miriam, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a quick rundown as to what interested you about this. Why did you went to Chernobyl.
I did. Yeah, that was amazing. Well, pretty much as I lay out in the piece, I consider myself an environmentalist, someone who's fairly concerned about climate change and have always just taken it as a given that nuclear energy is bad. It's dangerous. You say the word Chernobyl, that conjures up a lot of images. But then since moving here, I came across a number of people who said, well, you know, it doesn't emit carbon and you need to be practical. You know, nothing's perfect. So I went on a trip around the world to figure that out. And I decided, you know, if I was going to come to terms with nuclear power, I needed to see the two worst disasters and see what that looked like.
So tell me a little bit about some of the folks who don't, obviously don't live right in Chernobyl, but you stayed with some folks. You talked to a number of people who have experienced it. Some were alive when Chernobyl occurred. Some were not. It happened about 3 decades ago or so. What stood out to you most about the way people reacted, not just to the fact that you wanted to learn more about it, but the legend behind it and the truth behind it?
I think what stood out to me the most was how shocked people that I met in Ukraine were that I was even going to go there. It would be as if someone came here and said, I'm going to go spend a few days in your trash dump and I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. And you're saying, why would you ever do that? It's dangerous. It's scary. But, you know, and I had read a lot about that, and the statistics about death rates and cancer rates are really controversial and there are conflicting sides. But one thing that is clear is that the psychological impact of a nuclear disaster is probably the biggest impact. Mm-hmm. And I saw that firsthand with a lot of people, people who just, so I was in Kiev when I wasn't in Chernobyl, and I was staying with a friend's family. And, you know, they would just tell me these stories about people who had they never had headaches before the accident happened. And then all of a sudden they had all these headaches and, you know, living in the Soviet Union, you can understand why they wouldn't trust any information saying you're fine in Kiev. I think that really stuck out to me a lot.
This is not a direct comparison, obviously, but you write about Three Mile Island and, of course, the film The China Syndrome, which came out, 12 days ahead? Yeah, in 1979. So what were the differences between the reality behind what happened at Three Mile Island and Chernobyl? Why were the communities around Three Mile Island in some ways spared? Not spared of stress, but spared of actual consequences.
Sure. It mostly has to do with the design of the reactor. And the reason Chernobyl was so bad is a combination of human error, human arrogance, and reactor design. If you think about it, they have their fissionable material inside a building with no containment dome, nothing strong around it. So when someone decided to do a test that probably shouldn't have been done, it blew up. And that didn't happen in Three Mile Island. It's a totally different type of reactor, but even when the fuel started melting down, which it did, partially melted down in Three Mile Island, there's this big concrete and steel containment dome to keep radiation out.
So how does what we have at Palo Verde compare to that? Is Palo Verde state-of-the-art such as it is?
It is. It is. And I would add that the whole nuclear system in the U.S. really changed after Three Mile Island. And all sorts of new safety measures were implemented. And on top of that, just technology increases. It was a number of years ago. But then again, after the 2011 accident in Fukushima, it really made the U.S. industry and NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, sort of do a look internally and say, how can we prevent this happening, right? Fukushima was the accident that no one ever thought could possibly happen. Mm-hmm. How do we safeguard against things we can't even conceive of happening? And so Palo Verde is one of the safer plants, I would say, in the country, which, you know, living in Phoenix is something we should feel relieved about. But there's obviously there's a containment dome that's across the board in the U.S., but there's all sorts of redundancies and built-in systems that should something fail, you know, there's six or seven backups.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix, talking with Phoenix New Times writer Miriam Wasser. We're talking about her in-depth piece titled The Millennial's Dilemma, A Young Writer's Search for Our Nuclear Future in Chernobyl, Fukushima, and Phoenix. So there was actually a horror movie, if I remember right, made about Chernobyl, or at least similar, where people went, oh, you know, there might be people who've been impacted by this. We've all heard of the three-eyed fish. If people watch The Simpsons, it's near a nuclear power plant. Mm-hmm. How much of that, based on what you research and the folks you talk to, should we in some ways be worried about? I mean, is a nuclear disaster, obviously it's possible, but is it really possible?
I would say that the lesson of Fukushima is that anything is possible, and that you get in trouble when you start thinking that it's not possible. Mm-hmm. And you need to be on your toes at all times. And from what I saw at Palo Verde, I think that that's actually the case. I can't speak for other plants around the country, but mm-hmm. that's what I saw at Palo Verde. In terms of the three-eyed fish and all sorts of deformities, I don't know. That's one of the things that is really controversial and that people have different opinions about. I've seen those pictures. Yeah. And then you read articles that debunk that and say that's a fish from Australia that has nothing to do with Three Mile Island or something. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the struggles in this piece, is that there are things that nobody knows.
So obviously you're a journalist. You went into this as a journalist, but mm-hmm. Even the title of it, we talked about you being a millennial and the fact you're an environmentalist and you write about how when you were a younger woman in college and all the things that you did. So did this complicate things for you? Did it help you affirm what you felt like you already knew? Or did it make you more open-minded in some ways to say, yeah, I still have questions about nuclear, but I'm not quite as negative as I was before? How would you characterize all that?
I would say that, so before I even began this project, before I even conceived of it, I was against nuclear power. Mm-hmm. I knew that in my gut. And then as I was developing the project and hearing people say that maybe nuclear is an option, I decided that I needed to be open-minded about it. And my job as a journalist is to say I'm not going to bring this baggage of my previous feelings before, and I'm going to challenge myself to really hear what people have to say. And I think as I conclude in the piece, I have my moments where I still think, oh my God, this is so scary. We don't want to do this. But I think overall, at least for the interim, it's probably a good idea.
And even during this presidential campaign, we've been hearing a lot about the Iran deal, and people are really sketchy about that. They're nervous about that. How much does emotion play a part in this?
In nuclear power in general?
As far as how we as a public feel, how you felt about it before you researched it more?
I mean, I'd say it's almost 80%. It's almost 80% emotional. We have this visceral reaction to it, and a lot of it has to do with news stories we read or horror movies, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The quintessential horror movie is some beast getting irradiated and then taking over or destruction.
Even Godzilla, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Godzilla is a perfect example of that. And I think that we internalize things that we've never even really thought about. And so nuclear is really scary for some reason.
So briefly, did you have friends from the college days contact you? Did you let them know you were writing this? What sort of perspective did they give you?
Sure. Actually, one of the people that I interview in this story was a friend of mine, Andras, from college. And he speaks Japanese fluently and was in a little town near Sendai, which is just north of Fukushima, when the tsunami and nuclear disaster happened. And he told me his story about the tsunami destroying his town. He was in this refugee camp, basically a middle school turned into a refugee camp, mm-hmm. and finding out that there is a problem at the nuclear plant, but having no information other than that, and trying to come to terms with the fact that he could be dead in a couple of days. He has no idea. So he liked it.
Phoenix New Times writer Miriam Wasser, we've been talking about her piece, The Millennial's Dilemma, A Young Writer's Search for Our Nuclear Future in Chernobyl, Fukushima, and Phoenix. Miriam, great to have you here. Thanks.
Thank you so much.